You heard of this thing, the 8-minute abs?
Yeah, sure, 8-minute abs. Yeah, the exercise video. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, this is going to blow that right out of the water. Listen to this. 7-minute abs.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. On today's show, we get serious about... Oh, come on. Have you even listened to this show? We ain't getting serious today. But we are excited to welcome special guest, the debt-free diva, Tony Husbands. In our tech segment today, we welcome from annuity platform Abaris, Matt Carey. Also on today's show, from Afford Anything, Paula Pant, and making his triumphant return to the show, the other rarely heard half of the team of Afford Anything, Will Sisk. And because it's Friday and he's got nothing better to do, here's your host, Joe Saul Sehi.
Memories are like moonbeams. We do with them what we will. Hey, everybody, I am Joe Saul Sehi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And what a great episode we have for you today. Tony Husbands is here from Debt Free Divas. And, you know, whenever I hear about annuities, I groan until I met Matt Carey. And I'm so happy that we can talk to him on the show. We have a fintech segment in the middle of the show for those of you that are new listeners, about 10 minutes where we just go over something new. We don't endorse any of the things in the fintech segment, but I'm very excited to shine a light on some things and some more than others. And this one, you know, whenever anybody can get my attention with annuities, at the very least, you know, we're going to have some fun today. You know what else is fun? Saving money. And to do that, you head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money. Because what you'll find when you head to Magnify Money is that they compare more checking accounts, savings accounts, and debt products than any other place on the internet. So whenever anybody writes us and says, hey, I have this problem, my savings account isn't paying anything, first thing we do, we send them to Magnify Money. There is no better place. And the other cool thing I like, I was talking to somebody about this at FinCon. If you're wondering what's going on with my voice, this is the first episode we've recorded since FinCon, and I still don't really have all of my voice back yet. But I was telling someone at FinCon, or we were talking about Magnify Money, and they send everybody they know to Magnify Money. So stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Just the fact that you don't have to give them any information about you. I love that too. You can just go and do all the comparison shopping you want. They have no idea who you are. Just fantastic. Also, another way, let's give you another $100. If you work with SoFi, S-O-F-I, on your consolidation loan or consolidating those student loans, guess what? Use our link, stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI, and you're going to get an extra $100 that you can put toward the principal. You can use it to send to your favorite podcaster, pay down some other debt, whatever you want to do. stackingbenjamins.com/SOFI for fantastic interest rates on not just student loans, but also on consolidation loans. And then finally, also on mortgages. You don't get $100 for the mortgages. They're not allowed to do that. But on the other two, that's when the $100 applies and you have to use our link. All right, guys, fantastic show today. And I'm just super geeked. So let's get into it. Tony Husbands, Will Sisk, and Paula Pant. Let's walk across the room to my dad's shortwave and dust this thing off, crank it up, see if we can get some of the greatest minds in financial writing and podcasting and also puppeteering. And we'll explain that here in a second. But first of all, let's go to the woman whose voice you hear all the time here from Las Vegas, Nevada, the one, the only Paula Pant.
It turns out I'm not necessarily the one or only Paula Pant. Actually, well, I may be the only Paula Pant, but there is someone whose name is suspiciously similar to mine.
Our friend.
Although not Pant.
Our friend Pauline Pequin.
That's true. That's true. You know, I get so many emails that are intended for her. And one of them actually was from an advertiser who flat out asked me if we were the same person.
It is a big conspiracy, isn't it?
I'm taking all of the first and last names that begin with PA. I'm soon going to be Paige, Paulette, Paulina. This is like a trivia. Pamela.
Well, they say to control a niche, right? And if you get all the PAs, I mean, there it is. You can own it all.
I should just move to Pennsylvania.
And you're done. You're done. And somebody who is not done, but just beginning on the show, I so don't know how to do a segue. It's the debt diva herself, the debt free diva herself, not the debt diva. What are we talking about, Tony? Tony Husbands is with us.
Hey, thank you for clearing that up a little bit.
I know. She's like, whoa, I'm not the debt diva. I'm the debt free diva. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, good. So tell everybody about your awesome podcast.
Well, I have this brand spanking new format, thanks to Joe Salcy himself, and I really appreciate the mentorship that you've offered, all for the price of a Starbucks coffee. And so I am really interested in talking with people about their debt-free stories. One of the reasons I do that is because that's kind of how I stayed motivated over my process of getting out of debt, paying off $107,000 of consumer debt that really could have been a house but wasn't. And so those are the things that I like to talk about people on a regular basis, just to keep people informed and encouraged and motivated that their mountain of debt that they are facing is not insurmountable, that they can, and someday will be, if they don't give up, will be debt free.
When I've heard you tell your debt story in the past, I mean, that's just a ton of debt. You must have felt completely, completely buried when you had that much debt.
And, you know, actually, which is crazy, I did not. It was not a sense, and I think I was just living in denial, and it wasn't until it was kind of all said and done, because it wasn't kind of a massive amount at once. It was just like, we never met a loan or a, you know, an opportunity to get into debt that we did not like for some reason, if it was timeshares or leasing cars. So it wasn't like we had $100,000 just sitting on top of us at once. It was basically a matter or a process over 7 years of like, you know what, we need to do things differently. So it wasn't necessarily where we had like the rock bottom experience, which is probably why it took us so long to kind of, you know, really get that clarity. But once it was all said and done, I thought, wow, we could have paid off our condo.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Well, it's an expensive lesson, but, you know, like Tony Robbins says, you can just be something different tomorrow, right? You can't go back and make up yesterday.
True enough. But I'm glad we did it. And so, like, now I like to talk to people who are either on this path or who have achieved some type of goal of their own, because it's just so encouraging to know that this is something I can accomplish, because you don't have to sit there and live a stressed out, in-debt lifestyle.
Yeah, looking over your shoulder. I remember thinking the American Express hitman was looking at my bushes all the time back in my dark past. But let's move on, because we have the puppet master at Afford Anything here with us. And it's funny, Will Sisk joins us. Welcome back, man.
Thanks. It's good to be back. And I also want to thank you, Joe, for letting me back on the show after the live show last year at last year's FinCon. And then also, I'd like to thank Paula for letting me play with her collection of puppets. So, yeah.
Nobody knows that really Will is the puppet master. Nobody knows that, right, Paula?
And just you, me, and the two people listening to this episode right now.
Right, which is
known as Mom and Dad.
That's right. Mom and the Bridge Club. That's it.
In reality, I like to think of myself as the Stacking Benjamin's personal finance pinch hitter. So
that's right.
I also thought I would start this out by throwing a reference that Paula probably will not get. So
I don't know what a pinch hitter is. That's true.
Yes. Score. We're one for one already. And the show is what, 5 minutes old.
Is this a baseball thing?
Oh,
correct.
Nice.
And I'm batting 1,000, and so are you. Well, you're batting 500.
Look at that. That's fantastic. Well, I'm glad you're back. Let's jump into these, if you guys don't mind. Our first article comes to us from Kiplinger. This one's by Rebecca Dolan. How to save big bucks at Starbucks. Paula, you a Starbucks drinker?
Occasionally. I used to go to Starbucks almost daily, not for the coffee, but for the ambiance. I would take my laptop and work out of there.
I remember that discussion.
Yeah. It was. I wrote a blog post about it called Why I Buy a Daily Latte.
So do you do this thing where it says opt for the unauthorized short size so that your Starbucks only cost $1.70 and you'll save $90 a year that way?
I didn't do that. But what I did do was, a little known fact is that you can get refills on your Starbucks coffee. So I would get the small list size that is printed on the menu, which I think they call a tall. I'd get that, just a plain coffee, and then I'd go back for a refill. So I'd get twice the coffee at once the price.
Tony, you and I have talked about Starbucks. I drove that hard bargain when you and I were talking about your show. I didn't even know that was the bargain till afterwards. So thank you. That was a great bargain. That's how I save money. I just have Tony buy it for me. But are you a Starbucks drinker?
You know, I'm not. And I'm not a coffee drinker either. Isn't that interesting? So I probably head into Starbucks like once a quarter for a smoothie or a tea or something like that. I do love their ambiance, though.
They have this idea, though, of the Starbucks reward program. Are there other stores where you take part in their reward program?
You know what? The thing that I love to do in terms of saving money on food products, if you will, or anything that I consume, basically, I like to go to places that don't have a big advertising budget. So if I don't see a TV commercial for them, I am there. And the way I find those places, you know, I talk with my foodie friends because they know where all the best places are, like the local markets and the local chains that don't have a big advertising budget. That's where I get my huge savings. So I don't have a Starbucks habit, but I will say that I do love a good cone of ice cream.
So, yeah.
So that's kind of, yeah, but that's probably where I waste my money.
But I don't know. How does that save you money, though? Is it because you're paying a lower price because they're not spending so much money on advertising?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody knows Whole Foods. Whole Foods is everywhere. But, you know, our big chain here in the Midwest is Jewel, right? You know, they're not Whole Foods. It's not Mariano's. But they're, you know, a decent price store, decent quality. But they're very expensive. And you can go to, a lot of times you can find here, like in Chicago, we have Pete's Produce. The exact, to the letter, exact same brands, just good 30% off the price.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I do. So Pete's doesn't have the big advertising budget, but they have the same products. They also do a lot of like locally grown, local sourced products and things like that. So you can really get good quality products without paying the same price. Because I don't do coupons and things like that, and I'm kind of lazy when it comes to like rewards memberships and things like that. I have to do what works for me. So I have to just go to where everything, the whole enchilada is just cheaper off the bat.
No, that's everybody. Will, you seem like a jittery guy. You must drink coffee.
Well, no, I like my spicy chai. That's my thing, because I'm even fancier than the average Starbucks connoisseur.
Starbucks is not fancy enough for you.
They actually have, you know what, they actually have a pretty decent, I'm not shilling for Starbucks, but they got a fairly tasty chai, but it's super embarrassing to order because it's the Oprah Teavana chai, and I just, it really kills me a little each time I order it in front of other people.
You go in at 3 a.m. because you're so full of shame.
Yes. And I love Oprah, but it's just like when I'm ordering a drink, you know.
Right. Will Fufu. How do you save money at Starbucks?
I don't. It's like this. This article was sort of funny because there's one point where she's actually talking about nickel and diming by bringing your own reusable cup for a 10-cent discount. And while I think it's a great idea to use your own cup, you know, for whatever, a variety of reasons, wow, like that alone will save you $36.50 annually, you know, not to spit on that, but it kind of reminds me of like, I don't know, like, are you going to go and like buy a Mercedes and bring in a coupon or something? I don't know. It just, the whole kind of idea is like, well, it's kind of a luxury. And if you decide that having that luxury is important to you, great, but I'm not going to junk up my mental space a lot with trying to game the system over $36 for an entire year of daily Starbucks drinking.
You better watch out, Will. You're going to start sounding like Greg.
I know. I sound like Greg and Paula. And, not like Len, though. I don't pay for my Starbucks with gold coins.
So. Right. Well, let's talk about things like reward programs and saving money and stuff that you like to do. Are there any reward programs or things that you do take advantage of? Let's throw away Starbucks someplace else.
Airlines. So I'm a big Southwest Airlines fan. So I am definitely committed to making sure that I can buy my ticket on Southwest Airlines so that I can use their rewards programs.
Yeah. And you actually get nice people working at the airline on your flight too, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
which I'm American. I don't get the nice people. Paula, how about you? Reward programs?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with airlines. I put all of my purchases on credit cards that have mileage rewards on it. So I accumulate enough that Will and I can fly internationally for free at least once a year.
Awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. Will, any other ones that you can think of where that you used to save money?
I mean, if it were up to me, I probably wouldn't do any of them, to be honest with you.
Really?
Well, yeah, because, you know, me personally, like, I'm not super, super great at setting up systems. I'm trying to get better at it. But to me, it's like, man, setting up all these systems, like, would really take away because you got to track the stuff, right? Like, sure, like you can have some kind of reward thing, but you know, there's all this like fine print and gotchas. And for me, since that's like not a skill of mine, I tend to just ignore that stuff because sure, I could get the card and carry it around or the app or whatnot. But at the end of the day, like, do I really want to track that? For me, the answer is probably usually not. So things that are like big wins, like the airline thing, that can work. But, you know, for these little rinky-dink things, no, I would rather preserve my limited amount of system building and tracking for something that actually, for me, is going to move the needle in my life. And the Starbucks discount probably isn't going to do that.
Yeah, focus them on your core competence.
Exactly. And this isn't my core competence, so I'm not going to try to win at it.
Yeah, right. You know what's funny is I remember reading Sherlock Holmes talking about how there was only so much room in his brain. Someone had asked him something trivial like, what is baseball?
So I'm like Sherlock Holmes.
You are like Sherlock Holmes. And he said he had no idea. And Watson said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, there's only so much room in my brain and I can't know everything. So Sherlock Holmes knows nothing about trivia, which says a lot because I know a ton about trivia, which shows why this show is so scattered. But let's move on to
cool. I feel better about my lack of knowledge about anything related to pop culture.
Isn't that fantastic? You're like, no, I'm not ignorant of that. I'm the most brilliant person you know. Just say that from now on, Paula. Yeah.
Yes. I think, yes, I've batted 1,000 or whatever number I'm supposed to bat.
Good. Will, she got two of them.
I know. I like the idea of being super efficient and not hopelessly out of touch. That's much better branding.
Yeah.
I like that.
Let's move to our second article, which is from Quartz.com. The middle-class American family saw the largest income boost on record last year. It turns out, Tony, that the average family finally saw a nice big raise. Now, the bad news is it takes us back up to about where we were in 2003. But the good news is we're looking at the average person got a $2,800 raise last year. Did you feel a raise in your own personal household?
Yes. Yes and no. I wouldn't say, well, I'll say it like this. I don't feel as bad as certain politicians are trying to make me feel I should. And I wonder, and I always wonder, this was a great article because I was wondering, okay, so if I'm not feeling like the economy is in the toilet as I'm being told that it is, who is? Because maybe that raise only applies to certain people or certain, you know, certain income levels or certain jobs or something, you know, and they didn't really go into that level of detail. They talked about, I guess, from a kind of a heritage type background or something like that. But that was something that's been on my mind for a while. So thanks for pointing that out. Because I was like, I don't feel bad about where the economy is. And maybe I'm just in a bubble. But turns out maybe I'm not in a bubble.
But did you feel like you got a raise last year?
I feel like we're on the upswing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would quantify it as like a raise of $2,000 a year or anything like that. But I definitely feel like we're on the, you know, we're moving forward. We're moving up as a like a family unit. And then I was kind of a little guilty, like, wow, I don't feel like we're doing bad. What are, you know, like, maybe I should have more empathy for the rest of the country. But turned out the rest of the country is doing pretty well.
It's doing pretty well too, right? Will, right. You feel like you got a bump in salary last year?
You know, when I feel like I've gotten a raise, Joe, it's normally been less of an effect of the overall economy and more of an effect of what I've been doing personally to either increase my skill set, seek out new opportunities, et cetera. So, yeah, every year has been better for me than the year before, ever since I started earning money when I was like 15, regardless of what the market has been doing. And, you know, I understand that not everyone is currently in that position, but I feel like, you know, I don't take umbrage with these sorts of articles exactly, but, oh, well, there's been a 3.7% increase in this or that. I'm like, well, that would be lost on, you know, if I just decided to learn a new skill or go after more clients or do something like that, that would far and away outpace, you know, any kind of gains that just sort of came through to me from the overall economy is kind of my philosophy about it.
Well, the reason I wanted to talk about this one though, Will, was because you talk about how ever you earn more money. And we see this every time there's a downturn in the market, people lose their job and they say, oh, woe is me. I didn't have any cash reserves. I had a lot of debt. Things were really bad. And now the economy's bad, so I can't get a job. If things are really good across the nation right now, how do people capture that so the next time something's bad, they don't have to worry about it so much?
I was to a large degree raised by my depression era grandparents. And I kind of came up on that kind of idea, like, of, hey, you know, waste not, want not, you know, put away money for a rainy day, all those sorts of things. So, I mean, really, it's just good financial habits. I've done a lot of travel internationally. Paul and I both together and separately have done quite a lot. And what always strikes me is, I have to throw this disclaimer in there so you don't get a ton of angry letters, but I don't have a platform, so no one can get me anyway. but, you know, I know that there are people who are struggling in America and hurting, and that is true. However, man, the poorest Americans compared to most people in the world are extravagantly rich. And you know, everything is relative. I get that. But there's always ways to save money and put money away if you have almost any kind of income. And when times are good, that's time to be getting your financial house in order, putting away money for, you know, if times are bad. And you know what? My experience has been that the more prepared you are for the bad times, the less likely the bad times are to find you is sort of how it has turned out for me. The less prepared I've been, the more trouble I seem to have gotten into in my life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And let's talk about some of those specific techniques. Paula, when Will talks about making the most of the good times, it seems like we don't know the good times were the good times until they're over. And then we look back and we go, oh man, I should have done something back there, right? So what techniques do you use in your life to capture the good times?
Well, I would say first and foremost, decide how much money you want to save, what percentage of your income you want to save, and take that off the top. And that really applies in both the good times and the bad. In the good times, there's a chance, there's a likelihood that the amount of income that you're earning is higher, and as a result, the raw number of dollars that you're saving might be higher. But as long as you're kind of paying yourself first and pulling those savings off the top and investing it, then you'll necessarily have wealth built up that can be your cushion through the bad times if that is required.
Yeah. Do you use like, by take it off the top, do you have, when income comes to you, you have part of it diverted automatically? I mean, what's the specific mechanism you use?
If you receive regular paychecks, then I think that setting up automations such that your paycheck gets automatically deposited into your checking account and part of that gets automatically filtered into a savings account, preferably at a different bank, or filtered into a Vanguard account, I think those automations are great for people who get regular biweekly or monthly or periodic paychecks.
Yeah. For my own company, I set up, you know, my partners and I, we set up payroll. A big part of it was just so we could set up those type of systems. So now money goes into that pot. And then before I can touch anything, my retirement plan comes out, all my, you know, all of my stuff comes out. It's just automating the process so that I don't have to worry about that. Have you guys done any of that?
No, you know, I totally hear what you're saying. The whole, even if you own your own business, set it up such that you are paying yourself a salary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to do that. I have not done that yet, but you know, who knows? Maybe that might be in my future.
Well, talk to me after the show. Tony, how about you? Because with $107,000 in debt, you had a lot of change, I think, in your life and had to put some systems in place to get rid of that monster.
Oh, absolutely. And we're still typically the W-2 family. So my husband is the primary breadwinner. So we definitely have automated savings in place. We don't even think about it. It just works. One of the things that we definitely have to do, though, because we've run into some problems with this in the past, is just maybe, say, on a quarterly basis, go in and make sure things are still set up the way that they should be. We've had some bank account numbers switch on us and things like that. So you don't want to just set it and forget it.
Yeah. But, you had a couple, not to cut you off, Tony, but you had a couple Wells Fargo accounts set up in your name or something?
Yeah, no. Wow, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
We do have a Wells Fargo, one of our mortgages is through Wells Fargo. And so, yeah, I'm like, that is really, really scary.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Very scary.
It sounds like you're talking specifically there about retirement, but in terms of like building your cash reserve, any apps or anything that you use, Tony?
I love Personal Capital. So that's what I'm using right now to kind of manage everything.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual strategy or the specifics about how we do it through our bank in terms of just setting up regular disbursements to our savings accounts. So yeah, that is one of the things that if I have to rely on my brain and I'm dealing with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old right now, yeah, it won't happen.
Yeah.
It will not happen. So I need technology to help create that process and make it something that I don't think about, I don't miss it, and then when I need it, it's there.
I'm dealing with just my mom and a cat, and I feel the same way. Will, you were going to say something?
I was going to mention something that has been, you know, on my mind quite a lot lately as well, is that, you know, in addition to, like, you know, these tactics and everything, you know, how to get the money out and whatnot, I think a big part of what some people are missing is a goal. I think a lot of people, at least this is my impression, is that a lot of people haven't really woken up to their kind of like financial lives very much. They're kind of just sleepwalking through it. And you're not going to get anywhere if you don't have an idea about where you're going to go. And also for people who are, you know, married or in a long-term relationship or whatnot, I think that having your partner on board with those goals and kind of knowing that you're working together can take away a lot of the objections that I hear from people saying, well, you know, I have this expense or that expense, and we have children, they have expensive things, and, you know, and, or I'm in college, or, you know, I have student loans, or, you know, whatever these things are that people have that are very common. It's like, well, I know, but other people have those too.
It's funny because, well, yeah, people hear that, Will, though, and they think, oh, that's kind of foo-foo stuff, pie in the sky. And then, but it's funny, I would go teach people how to use their 401k back in the day. And and I'd say, so you put 6% into your 401k. Why'd you choose that amount? And you know what they always said? They said, it's the amount I can afford. And I said, well, what's that going to get you? And you know what the answer to that always was? I don't know. And really, I totally hear what you're saying. Isn't that the most important thing? Like, where's 6% going to land? Once we know where you're going to land, then you can make changes. Because why make a bunch of changes in your life if you don't have to?
Well, so I guess, can I ask a question? Is that acceptable?
No.
Tony, did something about like goals or whatever change for you when you kind of made your turn from your sort of debt journey to being out of debt? Does any of that ring true with you, or how did you?
Oh, absolutely. I would say if I could go back to the goal question or the goal point is so important. And I really appreciate that you brought that up, especially if you're dealing with another person, because you could be two very intelligent and nice and productive people, but if you're going in different directions, you're not going to make much traction. And I think that's where my husband and I were. We had very different philosophies, if you will, about debt, about finances. And that's probably true of a lot of people when you get married. You know, we didn't talk about a lot of those things when we got married. We were young, dumb, in love, and we just like, we'll figure this out and make it work. And so after marriage and trying to like fit all that stuff in, it was really important. And I think we kind of just fell into this, but to kind of come together as a unit and say, okay, what are we trying to do here? You know, what is it that we want out of life at 27, right? What are we trying to accomplish in life? So the first thing for us, obviously, was getting out of debt. And I say obviously, and it wasn't that obvious because it was obvious for me, but it wasn't for him. So that took some time for us to even come together on that point.
Yeah.
But then, so now we have different goals. Obviously, we have children now, you know, we have children now, and we have property, we have wealth building goals, and we're thinking about in terms of retirement. We have, you know, hopefully parents that will be healthy for a while, but we have parents, we may need to do something with them. So there are a lot of things that we as a couple have to even get together on the same page. And it's not always, that's not a given. And I think that was for me probably a very eye-opening. I don't know why, you know, because I grew up with my parents and they argued all the time, but I don't know why it was so like, this person doesn't think like me, you know?
Yeah.
You know, who would have thought that he has his own ideas and perspective? And so that point about, you know, setting those goals, talking about those goals, if you are working with somebody else, is so super important. And I think we don't spend enough time on that.
Do you guys, Tony, have some type of a family meeting or something like a scheduled time?
Oh, yeah. I call it our financial committee meetings. Nice. So yes, very nerdy, but yes, we don't have them as intensely as we did when we were getting out of debt because a lot of things right now are on autopilot, but definitely, you know, once a quarter, plus my husband travels a lot. So we don't spend a lot of time together as a unit. So once a quarter, I definitely make sure that we sit down and make sure that our, you know, that we're still on track for some, our shorter term financial goals that we're trying to do. Like for instance, one of our shorter term financial goals is to go to Ghana at the end of the year. So those are some of the things that, you know, we need to make sure that we're, you know, we're on track, you know, that we're meeting all the things on our checklist. And some of our longer term financial goals are now, you know, paying off some of the real estate property that we have.
Got to take a quick break.
to say a big thanks to everybody who's gone to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. Because you know, when you go there, what you're going to find, you're going to find that checking account you've been using is awful. The savings account is abysmal. You're earning no interest. And you know why? Because you walked into the local bank branch and you just said, give me what you got. And the sad thing is that most of the good stuff you find isn't in your community. It is, however, on your computer. StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money for more. Go check that out. And while you're checking out money saving stuff on Magnify Money, you're going to see SoFi right at the top whenever they comparison shop. And you know why? Because the fine print, they get an A+. And what that means is very little fine print when you work with SoFi. It's all very easy to understand. You have a lot of options, whether it's your student loan you're refinancing, your personal loans, or your mortgage. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. And SoFi also throws in $100 if you use our link for that student loan or that personal loan. All right, let's turn away from our discussion here for just a few minutes for our fintech segment. Really excited about this. Matt Carey coming down to the basement. He worked for the United States Treasury. He also developed this product while he was at Wharton. And I'm really excited about annuities. It's weird to say I'm excited about annuities. Once again, we don't endorse any fintech segment here. We just want to show you all the stuff that's going on out there. That's the dinger saying that Matt's upstairs. So let's do this. Matt Carey coming down to the basement. And Matt Carey from Avaris joins us in the basement. Welcome, man.
Thanks, Joe. Great to be on.
Well, I'm glad you could be here. You know, it's funny, when I heard you guys were all about annuities, annuities are so ugly that I immediately wanted nothing to do with you. Is that what most people think when they hear that you're in the annuity business?
That's a funny thing to say. I mean, I think annuities are more than anything popularly perceived to be a four-letter word. And the reality is that a lot of products that are available in the market aren't very good value for consumers. And that's sort of the whole reason that we're in this business. We saw a huge opportunity to simplify products, allow people to compare them side by side, and kind of separate the wheat from the chaff, if you will.
Did you guys have some issue where you needed annuities in your life, either you or parents or someone?
Yeah, so it did. Two things kind of happened at the same time. One, my parents were 65 and about to enter retirement and had all their money in the market. And I was kind of the closest thing they had to a financial advisor. So they were asking me what they should do. And then the second thing that was happening professionally was I was working at the U.S. Treasury Department on retirement policy specifically, and I was kind of seeing the decline of pensions and what that means for both the baby boomers and Gen X and millennials, and kind of the coming wave of people retiring without a very large sum of money that is specifically for income. Those things kind of happened at once, and a light bulb went off, and I said, why don't we create the private market pension? Why don't we create the platform where people can buy pensions since they're not getting them anymore through an employer? So the closest proxy to the idea I had in my head was an annuity, an income annuity specifically. And so we've started there with the idea of creating the product in a whole new light and making it even simpler for people to understand and to compare and to buy.
Yeah, your thought process, I know, was kind of the same thing like people think of Orbitz or Travelocity when it comes to airlines, right?
That's exactly right. We originally got into this thinking, if an annuity is kind of the closest thing, why don't we make it easier to buy? But in building the business, we kind of realized that we need to innovate not just on the purchase process, but also on the product itself. So Specifically, right now, people tend to buy an annuity all at once in a large chunk. And we don't think that's very intuitive, right? If you're thinking of this as a replacement for a pension, shouldn't you be able to buy it every 2 weeks through your employer? And shouldn't you kind of be able to ease into it without thinking too much about interest rates or all these other complicated questions? And so really what we're trying to do is turn it into really an asset allocation type investment that happens in bits and chunks over time, fully digitally.
How is that different than somebody, than Matt, just going out and buying what's called a fixed annuity, right? That has a fixed interest rate.
Yeah. So a fixed annuity is kind of like, the best way to think of it is probably like a bank CD. With a bank CD or a fixed annuity, you're promised an interest rate for a certain period of time. Right now, a five-year fixed annuity might be about 2%.
I thought you were going to say like 0.2, but anyway.
It's bad, but it's not quite that
right,
bad.
Right.
And that's kind of used actually for preserving your money. We actually think the purpose of an income annuity, the purpose of a private market pension, is for retirement spending. So to have a paycheck, to have an income stream that starts when you retire and continues for as long as you're alive. It's kind of an automated way to never think again about what happens in the market, at least with that portion of your portfolio. And so the purposes of a fixed annuity are kind of different than it would be for an income annuity, which is where we're focused, or a private market pension, which we're bringing to the market.
Got it. We saw, you know, companies like Tesla, you come into the auto business, Matt, and General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, they don't like that very much. And you've seen lots of blocking of that. What did the annuity industry think when you first started coming around? Have you seen them working with you? Have you seen them working against you?
So we have a large portion of the insurance companies in this space, the ones who have this product on the platform. Right now we have 15 companies at last check on the platform. So in general, it's been a really collaborative relationship. I think from the insurance company's perspective, they face a pretty large challenge, which is they've always kind of sold products rather than letting people buy them. That's something you'll hear a lot from an insurance agent. Annuities are sold, they're not bought. What that means to me is maybe the products aren't simple enough to understand and they're not intuitive enough for people to buy. And so, you know, the insurance industry writ large, you know, just in the last 12 to 18 months, I'd say, has kind of woken up and said, wow, we're not really offering the kinds of services and the kinds of products that younger folks would want. And we're not doing it through the channels that they're buying things, specifically online. So we really need to do something different. And I think they've been, by and large, very supportive of what we're doing, just because they know how big an opportunity it is and how you can't just do what you used to do when selling through agents online. You need a whole strategy that is kind of native to the process, or native to the channel, I should say.
I remember hearing that a lot, by the way, when I was a financial advisor, that same phrase that annuities are sold, they're not bought. And it's partly they're complicated. So what have you guys done to streamline things and make it easier for people to buy?
So we're very focused on a relatively small portion of the market. And the idea of an income annuity, which is that portion that we're focused on, is you hand over a certain amount of money today. In return, you get a predetermined lifetime stream of income. So for example, a 65-year-old with $10,000 would get $600 every year. With $100,000, they get $6,000 a year. So about a 6% payout rate. It's really that simple. And we encourage people not to add bells and whistles, although those are available. And we also do a lot on the content side to really explain this. What we found, interestingly enough, is it resonates a lot more with folks when you talk about Social Security and a pension, which those two things are essentially an annuity, right? You are getting a lifetime income stream, same as this product. And people kind of get that and they have a desire to have more of it so they don't have to worry as much about what happens in the market and they want to be more diversified. So there's definitely a big content piece to this as well.
I'm at the site myabaris.com, and you guys have buttons to start planning, calculate your need, determine your fit, get advice. When people start clicking these buttons, Matt, tell me what they're going to get.
There's basically two types of users on the platform. People who are in the market already. We are the place they come because they can get quotes 100% on demand. It's the only place they can get them, and they can see the whole market. And so for those people who have kind of already decided to buy or are strongly considering buying, we kind of are a place where they can see the prices, compare products, compare features, all those sorts of things. The second user is someone who is looking to see if an annuity makes sense for them. So a user who goes through that flow answers more questions. So they tell us a little bit about their asset allocation today, how old they are when they plan to retire, how their money is invested, you know, the portion between stocks and bonds, qualified versus non-qualified accounts, whether they have another annuity. It takes about 5 to 7 minutes to go through that process. And then we provide at the end of that an assessment of whether you're a fit or not for an annuity. So a 1 to 10 score. About half of users, we give a score of less than 3. So definitely not a fit. And then for the others, we'll show them quotes and help them think through whether to buy and if so, how much.
How much of this can people do anonymously, Matt?
Basically all of it. They're able to get quotes. We do ask for an email address, but other than that, you know, we're not going to call you. We're not going to, you know, hassle you or anything like that. So, I mean, we believe in the power of providing people information and knowledge. So we make it really easy to do all those things.
You're not going
to
have the leisure suit insurance salesman at my door?
Yeah, you come on the site and then the next day you've got a cheap insurance salesman knocking on your door telling you there's 10 things you need.
Right. The too much hair gel. I remember
hearing that. That's not our business. In fact, we got in this business to do the exact opposite of that.
Right. But that would be a funnier business model. I think I might like that one better. The site is mayabarris.com. Biggest misconception about annuities that you found that people have when you talk to them, what would you say that is?
I'd say the biggest thing actually, and I say this with some trepidation because annuities in general, you have to be really careful. And some of the products can be high fee, but the products on our platform are actually really low fee. And you're going to do about the same from a fee perspective as if you were in an ETF. And you do much better than if you were to have a financial advisor, you know, charging you 1% every year. So I think that is the biggest misperception. I say that, though, with some trepidation just because right. I'm talking about the annuities that right. are on our platform, income annuities in general, not a lot of other types of annuities, which, frankly, are not a good deal for anyone, in my opinion.
But it's funny you say that. I mean, we've said this before on the show, Matt, that every product was designed with these great intentions. It's just you had people putting square pegs into round holes and you had companies that said, hey, maybe there's an opportunity to, you know, get a little more juice out of this. Really, the type of thing's not bad. It's some of the products inside that that are bad.
I think that's right. And I'm an optimist. I think that problem is less prevalent today. And right. I think technology is one of the big reasons why. When someone can compare things apples to apples and see, okay, I'm getting the same thing, but I'm paying more for it, that doesn't really make a ton of sense. Then you start to get better products. There's a virtuous cycle, I think, that technology creates in that respect. So I'm optimistic that there's going to be less of that in the future, but you've got to be online to be really reaping those benefits, frankly, because, you know, offline, it's a whole different world and you're much more likely to have a hard time comparing things and really understanding the value of what you're looking at.
Right. And there is, I mean, we have for some people, we've had experts talk about this and you've seen all the statistics, Matt, we have a longevity problem where people are living longer and longer. And the big question is will my money last?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, put out a report, I think, just in the last couple of days that basically said that 2/3 of people, based on their 401k balances and how much they spend today, can be expected to run out of money in retirement. So people are living a lot longer than they think. You know, the average 65-year-old male lives to 87 today and female to 89. So that's a pretty long retirement for most people. And people kind of are rooted in the old way where, you know, prior generations had a lot more income, again, from a pension and didn't live quite as long. So the challenge was much smaller than it is today. So it is a big challenge. And the markets change quickly. I mean, in 1990, if you were working at a S&P 500 company, you had a 90% chance of getting a defined benefit pension. By 2013, that was down to 7%. So,
holy cow.
You know, the world has changed really rapidly in less than a generation, basically. And unfortunately, it takes a good amount of time to adjust to the new normal. But
right.
we're trying to make sure people are. And it's a really big issue, though.
And then I assume that the way you guys are paid, you're compensated by the annuity companies when people buy.
Yeah, that's right. So it's one time. We disclose everything on the website. Everyone who buys from us knows exactly how much we're getting paid. And then there's no ongoing fees. So we make it very transparent and very simple. That's our pledge to customers. You know, we got in this business to make it more transparent and we take that commitment seriously.
Well, and you guys have also done us a favor. You've written a guide for DIY online retirement services. Tell me about this.
My business partner, Nimish Shukla, and I wrote this guide and it's focused on all the things that you can do to migrate portions of your financial life online and in your retirement planning online. So obviously there's the automated advice platforms, the Betterments and Wealthfronts of the world, but then there's lots of other things that you can do online much more effectively and much more inexpensively. So things like estate planning and wills, there's a lot going on there. Retirement income, which is the space that we're in, and lots of other things as well. So the guide essentially is about 20 pages, has reviews of a bunch of different products and how to think about whether or not they're right for you. And obviously we don't have financial relationships with any of those companies, but we just think, you know, especially for people in Gen X and a little bit older, there's a really big opportunity to save money by migrating some of your life online. And this guide was made to help folks do that.
And it's mayabarris.com/podcast is a link. By the way, we'll have that on our show notes. If you're walking the dog, out for your morning run, driving the car to work, whatever it might be. But the site is mayabarris. Thanks for hanging out, Matt. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. It was a pleasure.
Can seriously say I can't wait to see what Matt is going to be up to next. So for more on Abaris, head to either abaris.com, or if you are out walking the dog or doing whatever, you don't have the computer handy, head to our show notes. When you do, stackybenjamins.com, click on today's show notes, and what you'll see is a link to Abaris. All right, let's get back to our fantastic discussion with Tony Husbands from Debt Free Divas. And will Sisk and Paula Pant team afford anything?
I want to do a 180 here. And Paula, do you know what a 180 is?
Yes, it's half of 360.
Dude!
Woo! Well, that, it's not really a pop culture reference so much as it's a mathematical reference. That's why I got it.
But you know, thank you. But you know what? But you know what I'm referring to? I want to turn it completely the other way, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, and instead of saving money, let's talk about blowing money. And I love this blog, Aaron Lowry's blog, Broke Millennial, was one of my favorite reads. How would you waste money to improve your quality of life? Paula, let's start with you, because I actually thought, I was very curious, and it's very hard because you and I work together so much, to find articles where I wonder now what the hell you're going to say. But I really do wonder if you could not save $500 a month and you just had to have it make your life more fun, what would you do with the $500?
So does this assume that I'm currently exercising my current level of spending and I'm now just going to level up another 500? Because I'm tempted to say travel, but I already do a lot of that.
Yeah, I think so. Tony, Will, what do you guys think? You think that's a good assumption? Everything is the way it is now. You just have an extra 500.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
All right. Well, since travel is already taken care of, I think the next thing that I would do is spring for probably a house cleaner and maybe somebody to buy my groceries for me.
I always wanted that.
Yeah.
I've always
cook them for you too.
Yeah. Basically, hire someone to take care of my personal life.
Yeah, so you can focus on the fun stuff instead.
Yeah, can you please call my mom for me?
You know, it's funny though, somebody to buy the groceries. I actually read an article about a high-powered executive. She was amazing. I don't remember what she did. It was actually in Runner's World magazine because she also had 7 children. And they said, how are you a high-powered executive? You and your husband both take care of these 7 children. Like, what do you do? And she said having somebody do tasks like buy the groceries was a key. And she said at first that seemed like a waste of money. But it actually not only helped them make more money, it made their quality time so much better because they didn't have to think about that part of their life. So really, in some ways, I think you're cheating, Paula, where you are saving money by doing that.
I love that I save money on accident. That's the best way to do it.
Save
in
money.
My hypothetical imagination.
That's right. Save money by spending money. All right, Tony.
Did I just say hypothetical imagination? Like I hypothetically have an imagination?
Yeah, but you just got back from Burning Man, so I'm not even going to question that.
That's true.
You just blew my mind. If you had $500, Tony, how would you spend it?
Oh my God, I feel so immature about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It wouldn't be anything like productive or, you know, helpful around the house, although I could definitely use those chores. But I think I would like to do something like spend that on voice lessons or something that I'm like super horrible about, super horrible at. But I just have this desire to really want to be able to sing and sing on stage. But I sound like, you know, somebody stepped on a cat's tail or something. I think I would do something like that because it's just one of those things I've always wanted to do. I think I'm a closet performer, but I just don't, you know, sing, dance or act.
Yeah, but it's time to come out of the closet, Tony. Next time, I want to hear that those pipes.
So yeah, if I had the extra $500, I would definitely find a voice coach or some kind of, you know, pay somebody to let me in their, you know, let me take lead in their band or something. I don't know.
Will, the hell with next time, Tony. This is your big stage. Mom and the Bridge Club are listening. You ready?
Yeah, I haven't had my first voice lesson yet, so like, I'm gonna. Oh,
come on. Look at her back off that one, Will. Jeez, that's horrible. We gave you your opportunity, and there it goes.
I'm telling you, I suck, and you'll never ask me on this show again.
No, but you know what? No, seriously, because the first thing I thought of when you said that, I thought of one of my favorite authors, and probably my favorite interview on the show was with Austin Kleon, who wrote Steal Like an Artist. And I absolutely love the fact that he talks about playing the guitar, which he's not that great at, but playing the guitar because it informs his art, mostly because it has nothing to do with it. And studies have shown that you think more about your business when you're doing stuff that has nothing to do with your business. Like if you spend all day in the trench, you never get out of the trench and you never see the big picture. It's funny. I used to think it was a happy mistake that I would have my best thoughts about improving this show or anything that I'm doing while I was having a long run. Like I thought that was an accident. And then you see the science around that. It's not an accident at all. That's the way that it works. So I love that. I think doing that helps everything else you do.
Second on my list is to learn the guitar, but I'd have to cut my nails.
And that's the line you just won't cross, right? Will, if you had an extra $500, would you cut your nails?
No, I'd have them manicured.
Perfect.
Fantastic. I have people to cut my nails for me. No, right. I'm just kidding.
All right. What's your $500 dream?
I feel like I have everything I want already and kind of always have because I just don't want a lot. But I guess if it were like a recurring thing, I think what I would do, I was actually kind of exploring the idea earlier this year about maybe getting like a personal chef or, you know, not, you know, just someone to come in and cook meals. That sounds like really too fancy for what it is, you know, like once a week or something. I'm like totally okay with eating the same thing at every meal if it's, you know, for like a week straight. But then Paula made the point. It's like, well, you don't even really need to have someone come to your house. Like if there's a certain like dish that you really like at a local restaurant, like I could just go there and be like, hey, I need a catering quantity of these two dishes. Just order them, take them back to my place, and then, you know, divvy them up and freeze them for the week or put them in the fridge. That seems like an excellent use of $500 because I am an okay cook, but it takes quite a lot of time and I don't always want to keep up with like what's in the, you know, again, that whole planning thing. I don't always want to keep up with all that stuff. So I think that'd be a pretty good use of $500 a month.
Oh, that's fun. So food, music, and somebody do the shopping for you are our big three. I like that. I think that's a great way to end this particular show. Guys, let's find out what's going on in your necks of the woods. Paula, what's going on at the Afford Anything blog and podcast?
Oh, I'm announcing that I'm paying somebody to be on the Stacking Benjamins roundtable for
that's
me.
That's right. $500. That's what you do. That would have been the best answer ever. I'd get rid of this crap.
Let's see. What's happening on Afford Anything? Well, I recently published a blog post about how I tracked my time in 15-minute increments over the course of a week. After I published that, I got a great question from one of my readers who said, whoa, wait a minute. Everything that you described, I thought that if I were an entrepreneur, those are things that I wouldn't ever do anymore, like hitting the snooze button. Can you walk me through a day in the life? So I will, by the time this episode airs, be publishing and or have published a day in the life. And I promise it'll be more interesting than it sounds.
I'm thinking I get to be Paula for a day. I want to go back to that time when you had the purple hair. That's what I want.
Oh, I still have purple hair.
Do you?
You see me at FinCon. Yeah, it's purple, blue, and white.
That is so awesome. Well, this particular episode is going to come out when we're at FinCon. So can't wait to see your purple hair. I actually
then
just wish
I'd encourage everyone to check social media to see my hair.
It is awesome. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. We should do that. Will, I just wish I had hair.
I think we have the same haircut right now, Joe.
We really do, which is grasping for straws, man. Thanks for coming back and holding down the fort. And thank you also for being our stand-in Joe's Mom's Neighbor Doug while we're at FinCon.
Not a problem. I really enjoyed the energy of the live show, and I also enjoyed the opportunity to make a fool of myself on microphone in other formats as well.
And Tony, the debt-free diva, thanks for talking to us about $107,000 worth of debt and Starbucks and blowing money.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
So what's going on with the debt-free divas right now?
Well, speaking of finding an extra $500 to improve your life, I am challenging people at debtfreedivas.org to find their hidden money. I have a 6-day challenge going on. It's a free challenge. You can sign up. And if you find your hidden money, then maybe you can think of and take some of these suggestions we just gave you to improve your life.
That is so awesome. You know, people are going to think that I set that up specifically for you right there.
And you did not. You can join me maybe in some singing lessons.
So I could use singing lessons too, but I think I'll pass. I'll listen to you. All right. Thanks, everybody, for playing.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Hey, guess what? We play a game here every Friday on Stacking Benjamins. And you know what the game is? The game is me entertaining myself, and you have to figure out what the game is. So in either the description of the show, maybe the title of the show, maybe the first things that I say, the first few sentences that I say, there's something that might be a little bit awkward. And we've been playing this game. This is the fifth week we've been playing this particular game. And what you have to do is figure out what the game is that we're playing and then solve the puzzle and send me the answer to the puzzle. It's Joe at Stacky Benjamins when you figure it out. The first person to figure it out correctly is going to get a prize pack that I put together specifically for you. And that may include our new t-shirt, which is not finished yet, but Brad Lark, our awesome t-shirt designer, we showed his newest creation in the green room. And by the way, that's stackybenjamins.com/greenroom if you want to join us over there. And we've got some great feedback on the cool new shirt. It looks like a 1950s movie, which is awesome. And when you think about our show, you know, Stacking Benjamins, 1950s movie, clear correlation there. No, it's fun. I have to say a great shout out to Jeff, because Jeff gave me the best wrong answer of all time. He says, "Hey, Joe, hello from Sparty Country." He lives in Okemos. Jeff, I used to live in Hazlitt. So that's Jeff and I will nerd out about Lansing area for a second. But he thinks he solved the puzzle. And Jeff, I can't tell people yet what your answer was, but it was very, very funny. At the end of his wrong answer, he says, "Nailed it," and hilarious. And by the way, one of your things was wrong, Jeff, by the way. One of the clues that you put in your answer was wrong, but very, very close. I think you're on the right track. All right, let's talk about what's happening next week. We have a much needed week off. Can you believe it's been 8 weeks since our last week off? I can't. It's just this 8 weeks has flown. And what's funny is we finished the next 8 weeks. We're right into the holidays. And by the way that our schedule works out this year, unfortunately, we take a week off and then we go 2 weeks and then we always take the holidays off. So December is going to be a lot of vintage episodes. But coming down next week, our brand new intern, and we'll let him say hello. I'm not even going to tell you who he is, but our brand new intern taking over for Tucker the intern. He plays a few great episodes that didn't get listened to as much as we would have liked. Maybe I gave them a bad title. Sometimes I try to have one that you didn't listen to as much as I had hoped, because it was a really good episode, mistitled. Another one that was just a fantastic episode, and then a great roundtable from the past. So he digs in the vault and finds some of those and plays those for you next week while we are cleaning the basement, getting ready for a fabulous next 8 weeks. We have a star-studded lineup coming in the next 8 weeks at the beginning and at the end, and we are rapidly filling the middle with stars. So if you're looking for big names, we're not a show that really, I like big ideas. You know, big names are great. Big ideas for me are better. If I can get both, bam, that's the way to go.
But the next 8 weeks is big name 8 weeks. And I'm just going to leave that there. Doesn't that stink? Just foreshadowing with nothing else. So everybody have a fantastic weekend. Join us over at the Green Room podcast, wherever you get podcasts. That's our behind the scenes podcast, where on Tuesdays we have either longer interviews or talk to the people who make Stacking Benjamins about how we put the show together. If you're interested in how the sausage gets made, we talk about that every Tuesday. And then on Saturday, we play vintage episodes in order. And on that one, we are way, 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 way back at the beginning of our old show, which was called Two Guys and Your Money. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you back here next week.
Special thanks to Tony Husbands for appearing on today's show. You'll find more about Tony and the Midday Money Show podcast at debtfreedivas.org. Special thanks to Will Sisk and Paula Pant, a.k.a. Team Afford Anything, for hanging out with us today. You'll find more on Afford Anything at affordanything.com or, of course, at our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. And finally, a huge thank you to all of you for the fan mail. I just love this one from Olivia. Quote, if you live near me, I think I'd take out a restraining order. I know, Olivia, I know. Other women can't restrain themselves either. Don't worry about it. This show is the property of SB Podcast, LLC. The show is created by Josal Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart.
Where are you going? I was going to make espresso.